Om Shanti. I think you heard the title of our session this morning is, what was the title? Making Friends with Your Enemies, is that right? Is that correct? If it was Making Friends with Your Enemies, then that was the wrong title. Because the title should be Making Friends with the Enemy. With the enemy, not your enemies. It's good. First of all, I'd like to begin by just paying a little bit of a tribute to our movie evening last night. I presume everyone enjoyed the variety of stories and images that have been created in the form of our first film festival. I thought it was fantastic and a great beginning. And it was reminding me, actually, of the basic principle behind our film festival. Is the basic principle behind all our lives, in fact, and it's this idea of creativity. And sometimes, are we okay? No hearing? No translation? Which one would you like? There she is. Spanish. You can't hear me. They can't hear me. So who's doing the translation? They can't hear the translation. Okay now? No? Not okay yet. No, not okay. How many of you are you? How many? How many waiting for? Is it Spanish? Which language? Spanish. Spanish. You can hear? No? How many Spanish are here? How many Spanish? Can you hear? No translation. No Spanish. Can someone go and switch on the Spanish? I'm afraid I'll just have to carry on until they fix it. So I don't know what exactly the problem is. So it was reminding me of the question I'm asked very often is, what is the purpose of us being here? What's the purpose of life? And the purpose of life is very simple. It's to be creative. In some cultures, we have a saying. We sometimes say to other people, why don't you get a life? Have you ever heard that saying? Get a life. But we don't come to get a life. We come to create our life. And the one thing that every one of us is doing all the time, every human being is doing at every moment, is creating. You think, therefore you create. Everything in your life begins with your thinking. And that's what creates your life. I think we kind of know this. We kind of know this. But most of us, we grow up forgetting and not realizing our creative potential. Especially when we are directed into a job of work, it's sometimes called. And in most people's workplace, most people go to work. They don't go to work to be creative. We go to work to be what's called productive. And after many years of just producing and producing and producing, usually for someone else, it's very easy for us to suppress our creativity. And so too much production, not enough creation, makes for, in English, what we sometimes call misery, yeah, or a lack of motivation, a lack of motivation. So that's why many of us, at some stage, we have a kind of crisis moment. I don't like my job. I don't like going to work. I'm bored. I don't feel motivated. I feel very unhappy with what I'm doing. And I'm sure many of you have experienced that at some stage. And one of the ways out of that, one of the ways to reinvigorate your energy, to rediscover your enthusiasm is to rediscover your creativity. And your creativity goes across a scale from doing to being. It's a scale. It's not just creativity about painting and poetry and movie making. That's just one dimension of your creativity. And when we begin our spiritual journey, we get many opportunities to be creative in the context of doing things, of action. And as we spiritualize our creativity, we come out of the what we call the lokic world and into an alokic context, we spiritualize our creativity at the level of doing. At the same time, we're meditating, we're having yoga, and we're learning to be creative at the level of being. And so we're spiritualizing our creativity at the level of our being. And my own particular story, before I came to Gyan, one of the roles that I played for many years was in advertising agencies, and I used to write. I wrote a lot, what's called copy. And when you write copy, basically, you mislead people. It's very creative, but it's also misleading. So the quality of the creativity is not very high. And then I began my spiritual journey, and so I started using my writing ability in a spiritual context. So I began to spiritualize my creative ability. And then after a while, I began to change the quality of that creativity, where I stopped creating words and ideas and concepts from a worldly point of view and started doing that from a spiritual point of view. And so I very gradually, very slowly, spiritualized my creativity. And every one of us here has the opportunity to do that in whatever context we find ourselves in. And when you do that, you rediscover your motivation, what moves you from inside out. We come from the world out there addicted to being moved by something from outside in. That's why the movies, we go, wow, what a great movie, what a great film. And it's as if we're motivated, we are moved. Motivation, movement, move, we're moved from outside in. But when you discover and spiritualize your creativity, you start to motivate, move yourself from inside out. From inside out. And that's what Baba's talking about when he talks about the Master Almighty Authority. The Master Creator. He's saying, you are just like me. But only when you move yourself from inside out. And I think a couple of days ago you had a panel discussion, and the first principle of that journey is something called self-responsibility. It's the realization that I am 100% responsible for my life, for the creation of my life, for the creation of my thoughts, my feelings, my attitude, my actions, everything. And so this particular session is really focused around not how to be creative, because we are all innately creative, because every human being is creative, but really what gets in the way, what stops me, what blocks my capacity to be creative, what is the enemy of my creativity? And in the world out there, when we have enemies, usually someone makes an enemy. And in a relationship where people are enemies, you have something called conflict. And two sides, two people, move into a space of conflict. Until one day, one of them decides they'd like to resolve the conflict. And the first step of resolution of any conflict between two people, two organizations, two nations, The first step is the seeking to understand the other. Seeking to understand the other side. And that first step is really me saying, I'm tired of being scared of the person I'm in conflict with. I want to understand their position. For whenever we fear someone, whenever there's conflict, there is a fear of someone, and fear is always based in ignorance. If you fear another person, if you're making them an enemy in your mind, it's because I don't understand the other person. Yeah? Ignorance, the basis of the fear of others. So the moment I understand the other person, I dissolve the fear. Now I know your position. Now I know what you stand for. Now I know your opinion. Now I know you. And as soon as that understanding is created, and it's a creative process, then the fear falls away, and they are an enemy no more. They are no longer your enemy. And so all conflict resolution in the world out there is based on mutual understanding. But our conflict, our enemy, is not outside. As I'm sure you're very well aware, our enemy is on the inside. And it's the enemy that we create or miscreate almost every moment of every day. But the principle is the same. When you understand the enemy, they no longer are the enemy. And the enemy I'm speaking of is the one you're probably most interested in, especially when you're here. In fact, I think that's one of the reasons why we all come here, to understand this enemy most deeply. And it is, of course, our old friend, the ego. And when you understand the ego, when I understand how I create the ego, which is really miscreation, when I understand that, then the ego ceases to be my enemy. Sometimes we talk about the vices. I'm sure you've had conversations about the vices. And we talk about those vices, those nasty little vices that get in the way of our spiritual journey. The five vices, you all know the five vices. Anger and lust and attachment and greed. And we talk about them as nasty little things inside. Because they're bad, aren't they? They're wrong, aren't they? Hello? And we have a tendency to position the vices as the enemy. It's as if we separate them from ourselves. And we talk about them, we name them, we write about them, and it's as if they're something separate. And then, ultimately, we start to fear them. We become fearful of our vices. But actually, there really only is one vice. And that really only means one mistake that we make. And it is the ego. For all the other happenings, let's say events in our consciousness, that we call the vices, anger and lust and greed, they are the children of the ego. They are the ego's progeny. And so when you understand the ego, then you understand all the other vices, and when you stop creating the ego, or miscreating the ego, then all the other vices, they fall away. They fall away. So, I'm not going to do all the talking this morning. I'm going to challenge you occasionally to stimulate your brain cells. And what I'd like to do now is challenge you to have a little conversation with the person next to you and see if you can come to a joint definition of what the ego is for you. I know some of you have perhaps been in with me before, and we've done this exercise before, but then, for me, I keep coming back here year after year. In fact, I keep going to the Murli morning after morning, because I hear it differently, I have different realizations and different moments when I think about the same thing. So, if you have been with me before in this particular exercise, just see what comes up for you this time around. So could I ask you to connect with someone next to you? Someone, maybe if you can, that you don't know, that you haven't come with. So you say hello to a stranger. And once you've done the introduction, a little conversation, what is the ego for you? How would you define or describe the ego for you? What would be your description of it? Take a few minutes to do that. And if the person next to you has already fallen asleep, give them a nudge and tell them it's time to talk. Okay, let's do 10, 9, 8, 7, 6, 5, 4, 3. It's good. Are the Spanish connected now? Spanish are okay? You can hear? Yes? No? See? No? No reply. It's good. Fantastic. Or delayed reply. Great. So, ego? Anyone? Ego? Anyone? What's the ego? Yes? I plus me plus mine. I plus me plus mine. I plus me plus mine. Sometimes I start an email saying, I, me, and myself are okay. Anyone else? You have to shout it out very loud. Letting go. Ego is letting go. No. Okay. Not loud enough, I'm afraid. It's too far away. It's okay. You'll have to shout it out very loudly. I know everything. The ego says I know everything, yeah. A false image of the self that seems real. So I'm going to go with that one. Fantastic. For me, the ego is all to do with images. It's all to do with images. And if I was to ask everyone in here what their definition of ego was, we probably get as many answers as there are people. And that's okay. I don't have the perfect definition. What's much more important is to see for yourself. And what you see is the ego in this moment now is okay. But then it's never final. And words are never enough. Words are not what you see. Words just describe what you see. So words are never enough. But I'm going to share some words with you anyway and see if you can see what these words describe. For me, the ego is the attachment to the wrong image of myself. I wanted to put it up on the board here because I was going to put it up on the screen because it's good to have something visual. But apparently, today, they're on strike. I think they must be French. Oh, okay. So for me, the ego is the attachment to the wrong image of myself or belief about myself. Now, if you go where those words point and you see, in other words, be self-aware, you'll notice that whenever you attach to any image in your mind, you lose yourself in the image. You lose yourself in the image. So you identify with the image. Yeah, so it's attachment to and identification with an image on your mind. And that's when the ego takes birth. Now I did first of all say the wrong image. But in truth, for me, any image. The mind is like one of those screens. And that mind is designed for you to be creative, as I was sharing earlier on. It is the arena of creation. And we are creating ideas and concepts and images almost constantly. That's not wrong. That's what we're designed to do. But the mistake that we make is that we leave the place of creation. And we go into our minds, and we go into what's on our minds. We go into the image that's on our minds. And we lose our sense of self in the image. And that's when the ego takes birth. That's when the ego is born. Now, let me give you an example, and many of you will know. The example I use most frequently is a very easy example, and it's of an object, just to begin with, because objects, in truth, the objects in your life exist in two places. They are outside, but any object is also inside. Two realities, external, internal. And whenever you look at anything or anyone, you bring them into your consciousness and you recreate on the screen of your mind the object outside, inside. In fact, that's what you're doing with me right now. Because where am I right now? Where am I right now? On the stage? No. Where am I for you right now? Where am I for you right now? Here. Yes, I'm on the stage, but for you, I'm on the screen of your mind. Now, what are you doing with me on your mind? Actually, what are you doing with me on your mind? See, now some people over here, they're going, oh, Mike George, he's fantastic, love him. Other people over here are going, get this guy out of here, can't stand him. Who's doing that? I'm not doing that. You're doing that. As you create me. Because that's what you're doing right now. You are recreating me in your mind. No problem. That's what we're designed to do. So let's take a very simple object. I have a new car sitting on the road, and there's my new car. I bring the image of the car into my consciousness through my eye. No problem. I put the image of the car up on the screen of my mind. No problem. I have to do that because I have to think about the car. I have to put petrol in it. I have to wash the car. But the mistake that I make is that I leave my throne at the center of myself and I go into my mind. I go into my mind. Not just that, but I go into the image of the car on my mind. So I lose myself in the image on the screen of my mind, in my creation. And that's called attachment. When I grab this, I'm not attached to this. My hand is attached to this, but that's not attachment. Attachment is when the I loses itself in an image of this in my mind. That's attachment. This is my body attaching, but I am not attached to this. Do you see the difference? Attachment is entirely in the mind. So then someone comes along and they scratch the car, as you know, as they do, because the world is full of car scratchers. Isn't that true? I think so. That's the reality of life on earth. So someone scratches the car, and how does Mike feel? Mike gets very angry. And so we have the emergence of anger. Emotion, the emotion of anger. Why? Because someone scratched the car. So, let's do it very logically, very rationally. You scratch the car, and I feel pain, emotional pain. Who creates my pain? I do. Remember, first session, 100% responsibility for my creation. So, you scratch the car, I feel pain, therefore, I think I am a car. In that moment, I am the car. And it's time to see a psychiatrist. Good morning, doctor. I'm a car today. See? I use this as a very simple example. So, if I don't want the pain, if I don't want the anger, then I have to be aware and not become attached to what's on my mind. So I need to detach or be non-attached from any image on my mind. Any image. And those images that we create, not just of objects, but we create those images of memories, ideas, beliefs, other people. It can be a thousand things that we use to imagine, to image, imagination. The imagination is not bad or wrong, it's when I lose myself in the image. That's the mistake. And that's why the simplest definition of ego is that one word. It's just a mistake. That's all it is. I mistake myself for something I'm not. Or in the language of New Scotland Yard, a case of mistaken identity. Yeah? So this is where all suffering comes from. This is where all pain comes from. This is the root cause. Doesn't matter what the situation is, what the circumstances are outside, doesn't matter what someone else says or does not do, if I am suffering emotionally in any way whatsoever, this is the cause. This is the cause. So what do we get attached to? people, money, possessions, privileges, position. Your Porsche. Things outside and things inside. We get attached to memories. Watch yourself. Do you ever watch yourself throwing up memories of yesterday, memories of childhood, memories of, and then getting lost in the memory, in the images, in the story that you create of yesterday? You lose yourself in the story, in the movie that's playing in your mind. And as you do that, you're losing your true sense of your authentic self. You're identifying with something that you're not. So where there is ego, there is attachment. And where there is attachment, there will be something called resistance. And this is the moment you will notice first. There's a resistance to something or someone. And you will feel that resistance either emotionally or physically. Because where there is resistance, if I hold on to this, not just physically, but in my mind, if I attach to this in my mind and you want to take it away, I'll start to resist you. There'll be a resistance. Go away. You're not going to take this away, are you? Don't take this away. Please don't take this away. And I'm gripping, not physically, but mentally, the image of the object. And that's what makes me resist, and that means the emotion that is present is fear. This is where all fear is created. So where there's ego, there is attachment. Like that. Where there's attachment, there's resistance. Where there's resistance, there is fear. And so where there is fear, there is ego. Full cycle. Why do we meditate? Because we're learning to be self-aware. Simplest definition of meditation is the cultivation of self-awareness. So I sit quietly and I meditate. And really, what am I doing? Yes, I'm becoming soul conscious. But actually, between here and soul conscious, I'm becoming aware of what's in the way, of the habit of creating an image and attaching, creating an image and attaching, creating an image and attaching. It's just a very deep habit. And the more I become aware of that habit, sanskar as we would call it, the more I'm able to not let it overpower me. Not let the anxiety, which is fear, which arises out of the ego, the attachment, not to let that overwhelm my consciousness. Ah, there's anxiety. There's tension. I'm scared. There's a feeling of fear coming up. I do my Sherlock Holmes and I trace it back. Ah, there's an image I'm getting lost in. I can see it. I see the image. I see what I'm attaching to. And the moment you see what you're losing yourself in, you are free. You are free. The moment you see what you're mistaking yourself for in your own mind, you are free. Because in that moment, you separate from the image. The creator and the creation separate. When the ego is present, it's like the creator and the creation, they are one. And you're losing yourself in your creation. You see? So, it's very difficult to begin with to see what we get attached to. It's quite challenging to see what we are attached to. Because those images, they come up so fast. We're interacting with people and life and situations so quickly, it's quite hard to see what we get attached to moment by moment. It's also quite good and quite easy, not good I should say, but quite easy to suppress our fear, to disguise our fear. In the world today, we're taught, don't show your fear, because then you show your weakness. So we kind of learn to sit up straight and put on a good face and, no, I'm not scared. Boys are especially good at that. But it's impossible to disguise the behavior that is generated by the fear, which has its cause in the attachment. It's impossible to disguise the behavior of resistance. And what kind of things do people do? What do you see people doing which means they are scared? What kind of behaviors do you see? The kind of behaviors we see every day, the ones actually we talk about quite a lot here in classes and workshops, are favorites. Complaining, blaming, criticizing, avoiding, running, shouting, lying, manipulating, controlling, envying. So many different behaviors which are shaped by the emotion of fear, which has its cause in the attachment of myself to an image in my own mind. So, for example, let's say you come in with a new idea and you present the idea. Let's say it's the service meeting at the center and you've come in with a brilliant idea for service and someone, they come up and they start to criticize your idea. Let's say I start to criticize your idea. I think your idea is a terrible idea. I don't like that. No, I think that's awful. And I start to attack your idea. What's the emotion behind my attack, which is what criticism is? It's an attack. And the emotion behind any attack is fear, always fear. Two countries fight each other because they're scared of each other. So I attack your idea. Why? What is my attachment? What am I attached to? I'm attached to my idea. What's my fear? The fear is they'll use your idea and not my idea. So I criticize. Why? Because I'm scared they'll use your idea, not my idea. What am I attached to? What am I identifying with? I'm identifying with my idea. The moment I drop that attachment, the energy is transformed. Sometimes someone comes in with a new idea and they say, hey, here's a new idea. I think it's good. I like it. I don't mind if you use it or you don't use it. I can explain it. I'm very enthusiastic. But look, I'll leave it with you because I'm going to get on with the rest of my life and make some more ideas. Sometimes people do that, don't they? And they're very detached. Oh, look, here's an idea. Have it. It's yours. It's not mine. I'm going to make some more. I'm going to create some more. But some people, they walk and they go, this is the idea. That's terrible. This is my idea. My God, this is mine. Oh, I'd never use that. And they sit down, don't they? And they stay there until everyone decides to use their idea. And as they sit there waiting for their one idea to be accepted, what are they not doing? What are they blocking and suppressing? Their creativity. Another example might be possessing. Possessing. When you try and possess, maybe you, before you came into Gyan, I'm sure you must have said this to someone, before you began your spiritual journey, you said to someone, did I see you with that person at the party last night? You were with them for 22.3 minutes, weren't you? You were laughing with them. You like them, don't you? You're not going to leave me and go with them. You're not going to leave me and go with them. Please don't leave me. Don't go away. Please stay with me. So, what am I trying to do? I'm trying to possess the other person. What's the fear? The fear is I might lose the other person. So what's the attachment? It's to not the other person, but to the image of the other person. You don't get attached to other people's forms. You get attached to the image of the other person in your own mind. Have you ever noticed why you love someone more when they're not there? You ever noticed that? Yeah. Don't you say, oh, I love them so much. You know I love them. Oh, I love them so much. And then they come in the door and you go, oh my God, not you again. Or you're thinking it. And the reason is very simple. It's called idealization. You create an idea, an image of that person on the screen of your mind. And you create them perfectly. Exactly the way you want them to be. Or the way you saw them the first time you met them. And you idealize them. Then as soon as the real person in the physical form walks in the door and they don't meet exactly, they just do something which is not up to your ideal in your mind, you start getting a bit, tell you, what we in English call grumpy, yeah, which is the birth of irritation, frustration, anger is beginning to emerge. And of course love has flown out the window, yeah, because we idealize someone. So two examples. Do you all have a piece of paper? Do you all have a piece of paper? If you don't have a piece of paper, steal, or should I say creatively swipe, a piece of paper from the person next to you. Yeah? You need a pen and a piece of paper. A pen and a piece of paper. If you don't have one, get one from the person next to you. A little exercise. And let's see if you can see the reality of this process in your own experience. In your own experience. And see if this works for you. Could you put three lines down the page? So you have four columns. You want to put three lines down the page, so you have four columns. Four columns. Three lines down the page, so you have four columns. And then you want to do six lines across the page, all the way down to the bottom, so that you cover the whole page. So there's space between each line. Six lines across the page. Fantastic. At the very top left-hand column, just write the word behavior. So the top left-hand column, write the word behavior. Top left-hand corner, so it's the first column right at the top, behavior. And the top of the second column, the top of the second column, is example. And the top of the third column, the fear. And the top of the fourth column, the image of attachment. The image of attachment. That's the image you are attached to in your mind. So now we go down the left-hand column, below behavior, in the first, or the second, I should say, the second line across, in the left-hand column, complaining. Then we get down to the third row, below complaining, into the third row, blaming. And then into the fourth row, below blaming, you put self-limiting. So you have three behaviors in the behaviors column. Complaining, blaming, self-limiting. And so the workshop is, with the person next to you, from your own experience, find an example of each behavior. Find the fear behind the behavior. And remember, fear is always of loss. Wherever there's fear, it's the fear of losing something. And then behind the fear, what is the image you're attached to? In other words, what's generating the fear? What are you attaching to? What's the image you're attached to? Very easy. Everyone has examples in their own life of those behaviors, I would believe. And so have a conversation with the person next to you and see if you can fill in the blanks. Fill in the blanks from your own experience. Yeah? Have you just arrived? I just did a couple of examples, yeah. Ask the person next to you the two examples that I just shared. It's good. Do you want to do that for 15 minutes? Something's not clear in the diagram. I think, is everyone clear on the diagram? Three columns, five rows. Sorry? So you have three columns, so three lines and four columns, right? And then six lines down, so you've got rows. He's got it. If anyone's not got it, stick your hand up and ask someone behind you who has got it. Yeah? And then you want to work the three examples through the behavior, example, fear, attachment, and see if you can see from your own experience where the ego is taking birth. And if the person next to you is having a snooze, give them a nudge, tell them there's work to do. We're here to do some work. It's a university. Thank you. So let's do 10, 9, 8, 7, 6, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. Fantastic. Did you all get there? Just say yes. Thank you. Brilliant. And as many of you know, I like to get examples and interact a lot, but it's just a bit challenging with so many people. And for those of you who've done this before, I hope you got something different out of the exercise. I've done this exercise hundreds of times, and every time I get something different out of the exercise. I see another angle, I see another dimension. So let me give you some examples against those behaviors and just see if it works for you or see if it clarifies what you managed to come up with. And the example I use with complaining is very simple. I go into the restaurant and the soup is given to me and the soup is cold. And I start complaining about the soup. How dare you give me cold soup? You know, the English are very good at this. How dare you give me cold soup? And I get a little bit angry. And so, what's my fear? What's my fear? The fear is, I'm going to have to eat cold soup. And what's the image I'm attached to? It's very simple. The image I'm attached to is hot soup. Hot soup. It's very simple. See it? Yeah. It's a little bit deeper. Sometimes it's a little bit deeper. And it's not just what's on the surface of things. A little bit underneath is that I've been given cold soup, and so the fear is I'm not getting respect, and I'm not going to be respected. I'm angry I'm not getting respect, and I fear I'm not going to be respected. And so what's the image I'm attached to? I'm a highly respected person. I expect to be respected. I expect to be respected. You all recognize that a little bit? A little bit? Because this is one of the most common mistakes that we make. We expect respect. And that's really the ego is based on the attachment to an image of receiving respect from others. And so when it doesn't come, we become upset. As I'm sure you know. Blaming? Did you all do blaming? Mostly people say when they blame, it's their fault, it's his fault, it's her fault. And so what's my fear? The fear is when I blame others for doing it wrong, I'm scared people might think it's me. So what's the image I'm attached to? I'm Mr. Perfect. Yeah, I never get anything wrong. Yeah, no, I'm perfect. And that's the image I have in my mind of how I believe others see me. And I'm scared that image will be shattered. So I blame, they're the ones to blame because I'm scared people might think it's me because I'm attached to the image of me being seen as perfect. See, so images are not just one-dimensional. Images that we attach to are multi-dimensional. They've got a history to them. They've got a dynamic behind them. Personality as well is sometimes part of the image. So self-limiting, did you do self-limiting? Self-limiting means I can't do that. I can, I'm not capable of doing that. And most people believe the fear is the fear of failure. And then the image I'd be attached to is, hey, I'm Mr. Successful. I'm always successful. I'm Mr. Success. But actually, it's more often the other way around. It's not the fear of failure, it's the fear of success. And for me, many of us in this room now, this is our greatest barrier, is our fear of succeeding. I went skiing when I was 10 years old. I fell down. I hurt my leg. And I came to the conclusion I cannot ski. I'm a not skier. So I create a little image in my mind of being a not skier. I can't ski. Do you remember old photographs? Do you remember the old photographs? And you went to the chemist to get your photographs, and you got positives and negatives. A little bit like that. I create this negative image of being a not skier. I can't ski. 30 years later, you say, Mike, we're going skiing. Come skiing. In comes the word skiing. Out comes the words, I can't. Because I'm scared. Not to fail, but I'm scared to succeed. Because if I become a skier, I'll have to shatter. I'll have to break. I'll have to lose this image of being a not skier. And I'm very attached to this little image. This little image of me. It's very comfortable in here. This is my comfort zone. And you're asking me to step outside my comfort zone? Oh no, I like it in here. It's very nice. Yeah, this is me. No, I can't do that. I'm very comfortable with being a not skier. Do you recognize this a little bit? Yeah, and this is actually the ego as well. Sometimes we think the ego is someone with a big head. Oh, they're so big-headed. They've got a big ego. But actually the ego is someone with a very small self-image. Just little me. Yeah, just little me. I'm like it in here. Yeah, and so it's the same mechanism. Just the same mechanism. This is a great exercise. Just a fantastic exercise to do. This for me is the kind of exercise that awakens my awareness to the mistakes that I make in my consciousness. I don't, when I use the word mistakes, I don't mean doing wrong. I just mean the habit of identifying with something that I'm not. We've been doing it since we arrived, since day one. The world teaches us to do it 100 times every day. And so to break the habit, I have to become aware of the process. Many years, someone asked me, many years ago, when I did this in Madhavan in the meditation room, we did this exercise, and he stood up and he said, do we have to do all this work inside? Can't I just remember Baba? I just want to remember Baba. Why can't I? Do I have to do all this? So we have an encore in the... It's too complicated. It's too much work. I just want to remember Baba. Yes. For me, it took me many years to realize it's impossible to remember God until I do this work. Yeah. Impossible. And I'll give you a nice quote from our dearly beloved Daddy Janki. This is the essence. She said, if you're not remembering God, you are wandering through the jungle of your attachments. Yeah. If I'm not remembering God, I'm wandering through the jungle of my attachments. And what are those attachments? They're just images that I create in my own mind, and I keep jumping and swinging through the jungle from image to image to image to image. And if I'm constantly doing that, God can't get in. Baba can't get through. Because the mind isn't just like a screen, the mind is like a window. It's like a window. Just like those windows in the room here. Through a window, light comes in, and through a window, light goes out. And so the mind is like a window. God's light can't get through the window of my mind if I'm doing what? Always creating images and losing myself in those images. Yeah, another way of saying that is thinking too much. Living in the mind. And that's like drawing a curtain across the window. The sunlight can't get in and my light can't get out because I'm busy with my images, attaching to my images in my mind. So in fact, I have to do this inner work before God can get in and touch my heart. Because that's the way he comes in. That's why you've heard the word man, man above. Give your mind to me, not to all these images that you have been attaching to in your mind. It's good. So, I wonder if there's any questions. Any questions? No questions? Fantastic. Yes. Do we have a microphone? Can we have a spare microphone? Do you have another microphone somewhere? Coming right up. Sorry? Okay. So the question is, what about the image of the soul and the supreme soul? So let's go back to the original definition of the ego, which was the attachment to the wrong image of myself or belief about myself. And then I said, actually, it's not just an image, it's no image. Because some people say, well, if it's the wrong image, what's the right image that I should attach to? And in truth, no image. Because the soul is not an image. The soul is the creator and the projector of images. But the soul isn't an image. We tend to believe, if that's the right word, that the soul is an image because someone comes and says, look, here's a picture of the soul, or a point of light. And a point of light isn't an image, it's just light. In fact, it's the energy before it becomes an image, before it creates an image. So the soul, consciousness, self, the I, is prior to all images. It is the creator of all images. And so it has no image. And meditating on a point of light just helps me to free myself of creating and attaching, creating and attaching, creating and attaching. Because ultimately, the soul. What is the soul? It isn't a thing. In fact, it's the creator of things. Everything that is not the soul is a thing. Everything that is not consciousness is a thing. The only thing that is not a thing is me, the I, the self. Everything after that is a thing. And everything after that is potentially something that I get attached to and identified with. Yeah? And that's just the idea. The deepest attachment is to our beliefs. Our beliefs. The beliefs that we've created in the past and that we've stored in our subconscious outside of our day-to-day awareness. Yeah? But even during the day, that will come up. That will come up. What's the most common belief we get attached to? Let's say I'm an architect. I'm a brilliant architect. I'm walking through life with an image, a belief that I'm an architect. And then one day someone comes in and says, Mike, did you really build that rubbish out there? How does Mike feel? Mike feels very sad for a moment, just for a moment. Oh. And then that sadness turns to anger. And then the next time I see that person, I'll see you later, bye, I can't talk now, I'm too busy. I've got to go, because there's fear they will say the same thing again. Sadness, anger, and fear. The emotions of suffering. The signals, these are the signals of the presence of ego. So what's the ego based on? The image of I am an architect. But wait a minute, what's the truth? Is architect what I am or what I do? Probably the most common mistake in the world is we mistake ourself for what we do. You all have a business card? Some have a business card? Oh, let me give you my card. Here I am. Oh, look. Mike, manager. That's what I do. I'm a manager. There you are. There's my card. In that moment, I affirm the belief that this is what I am. But it's not me. It's just what I do. But the moment someone criticizes, just slightly criticizes what I do, and I react, that means ego has taken birth. I'm identifying with what I do, which is just an idea. Ultimately, it's just an idea in my own mind, my own consciousness. See, so soul has no image. The soul is the creator of images. Anyone else? If the attachment is so deep you're not aware of what it is, how do you become aware? The exercise we've just done now is the only way, ultimately, to awaken your awareness. It's like I'm asleep, and we're awakening our awareness. This exercise now, sometimes I call it doing a Sherlock Holmes. You all know Sherlock Holmes? Famous detective. You're doing detective work on yourself. And you're aware of your behavior. I'm usually very aware after I've shouted or complained or blamed someone. I just take a minute, oh, I was just blaming someone. Oh, wait a minute, hold on a second. And I felt, what did I feel? I felt uncomfortable. And that's a signal. So the blaming is a signal, the feeling of uncomfortable. Now, what was the feeling I felt? I felt angry. I felt anger. Oh, there's a signal, because anger is a signal. And so always behind the anger or the fear is attachment. I'm attached to something. Always. Without fail. This sequence is perfect in its... It always works this way. And then I go back and I see, I was attached to... The most common behavior for most of us, controlling. Yeah. When you try and control someone, what's the fear? The fear is they won't do what I want. So what's the image I'm attached to? The result, the outcome, being done my way. Yeah. I'm attached to a certain result, a certain outcome in my own mind. I'm attached to a person behaving in a certain way, so I try to control. When you turn the gun on yourself, you blame yourself, you criticize yourself, it's a little bit like self-limiting. It means that you have an image of yourself that you're attached to. And the image of yourself is not yourself. And that's why, ultimately, you cannot hate yourself. What you do is you do or you say something, and you create a memory of that. And then you hate the memory. But you say, I hate myself. It's not yourself that you're hating, it's the memory that you've created, and you're attaching to that in your own consciousness. Good. So just to finish off, maybe, and then if there's any burning questions, there's a microphone here. If you notice, and you will begin to notice, that out of attachment, out of the ego, arises what's called the cycle of emotion, or the cycle of suffering. Whenever you become attached to something, you will notice there is fear of loss. If you're not attached to anything, then you are free of fear. You will be fearless. But where there is attachment, there is fear. And when you fear losing something, then it's inevitable that you will lose what you fear losing. Inevitable. And when you lose something, notice the emotion you create. The emotion that follows loss is... the emotion. Not the physical tears, but behind the physical tears, sadness. Sadness or sorrow. Same thing. Now, all emotion passes. It doesn't stay. It passes. It changes its color and it moves. You can't stay in sadness. You cannot stay permanently in fear. And as the sadness passes, it turns into anger. As you look for someone to blame for your loss. So the sadness, immediately after the loss, turns into anger, resentment, irritation, frustration. These are the family of anger as you look for someone to blame. But the anger cannot stay. It will then turn back into fear that it might happen again. Yeah? And so if you fear that loss might happen again, guess what? It will happen. And then you will go, and then you get, and you go, ah, and you go, and you go, and you go, ah, and you go, ah. And you'll go around in a cycle. And this is called the cycle of suffering. This is the cycle of emotional suffering. And it's not just a cycle, it's also different levels of addiction, because we become a little bit addicted to these emotions. So every time I sit for meditation, every time I sit quietly and let go and detach and awaken my awareness, I'm weakening that addiction to those emotional states. Because for me personally, just about everyone in the world today lives in this cycle. And they're not aware that they do so. They're not aware of it. Because most people in the world, you ask them today, and they'll tell you, they'll say, it's good to cry sometimes, it's good to cry, I like to cry, I go to the movies, I'm going to see the movie, and the movie is a lovely film, and there's tears. And of course, people feel good after they've cried. Why? Because there's been a release. It's called catharsis. I release the pressure that I've suppressed inside. It gets a chance to come out. And this is why happiness in the world is commonly confused with relief from suffering. Happiness is most commonly confused with relief from suffering. Relief from some emotional suffering. And that's why people... they think it's good to cry, it's good to be in a state of sorrow. The tears come so easily. And then people say it's good to be angry, it's good to get angry, isn't it? It's good to get upset sometimes. This is the belief in the world outside. Maybe many of you used to have that belief, that it's good to be angry. Because it's natural, isn't it? It's human nature for people to get angry, isn't it? It's natural. Yeah? Is that true? It's my nature. No, the reason I'm getting angry is because the world is not dancing to my tune. People are not doing what I want. I'm not getting what I want. See, and that's the cause of the anger. And of course, what people don't realize is whenever you're angry, you have just disconnected from your true nature, which is peace, contentment, the awareness that I don't need anything from the world. I don't need anything from anyone. I don't need anyone to do anything. That awareness, very deep awareness, the basis of my peace, only that awareness frees me from irritation, frustration, resentment, jealousy, the family of anger. These are the family emotions of anger. And then people say, of course, you need to be scared. You need fear. Don't we need fear? If we didn't have fear, then, my goodness, how could you survive in the world? We need to be scared. And they had lovely beliefs that they're attached to justify their fear. But of course, when you're scared, when there's fear, and some people, they, maybe you, I don't know, after you've been to Madhuban, you go home and, oh, well, we had a lovely film festival, let's have a night out of the movies and see the movie, what they're like. And you'll go and see the horror movie, and we'll pay someone to frighten us. Yeah, we feel they pay someone to frighten them. And then they call it relaxation. It's true, isn't it? I just need to relax. Oh, my God! And then at the end of the movie, they say, when's the next episode? Because there's an addiction to the emotion which they believe is coming from the movie. But it's not. We know it's coming from within. As I live through the movie. You see? And so when there is fear, it's a signal I've just disconnected from my true nature, which is love. Which is love. And that's why, very simply, fear is love distorted by attachment. Fear is the same energy as love. It's me, it's my energy, it's my consciousness. It's the same energy. Fear is love distorted by attachment. That's why true love, authentic love, is only possible when I'm attached to nothing in my own mind, when my mind is totally free and I'm not living in my mind. I'm living from my heart, the heart of me. Do you see? So these emotions are signals. They're just signals. The anger comes up, and it will come up. The sadness comes up. The fear comes up. And these emotions do come up. We're not walking away from here perfect in a day or a month or a year. They will come up. And so now I'm reading these as signals. They're signals. Come back. I'm attached to something. I'm identifying. What is it? There it is. I see it. And I'm free. I see it and I'm free. I'm aware and I'm free. And that's my work every single day. I sit in service meetings a lot. And as you know, when you sit in service meetings, you sit across the room from other human beings, unfortunately. And other human beings, what do? They press your... What do we say? They press your buttons. They say things and they do things. Little, tiny little things. And I get, what are you doing that for? What are you doing that? I'm not saying it, but I'm saying, what are you doing that? What are you doing that? And I notice, I'm reacting. And any time you react to anyone, it means I'm not in my throne. I'm not in control. The emotion, the anger, the irritation comes up and it takes over. What are you doing? What are you doing? I'm reacting. And that means I'm not the master. And if I go behind the reaction, I'll notice there's a subtle image I'm attached to. I don't see that image until after the meeting is over. And I sit down and say, well, how did I do? Oh my God, I reacted in that meeting. And so I do my Sherlock Holmes. What were the signals? What was I feeling? What was the emotion I was feeling? Okay, what was behind that? Oh, I had an image that I wanted to do this and not that. Next time, next meeting, tomorrow, next week, I'll be more aware. I'll be more awake. This is my work. Every day I do this. Every day. Hundreds of times a day. This is the real work. It's good. Someone have a question down here? We'll just finish with one question and then you can have a break before lunch. I can sense, yes. Yes. You cannot blame yourself. you're blaming a memory of what you've done. In other words, a memory of yourself, which is not yourself. You are always just yourself, but you do something. You say something. Now it's a memory. And a memory is just another image. Yeah, memories are just images. And so you bring that image up on the screen of your mind, and you blame yourself. Do you see? You blame the image, the memory, not yourself. You cannot blame yourself. As a Brahmin, are you really clear on the question? Really get the question clear before you, yeah? Okay. Okay, good.
I'm not sure how clear I am on it. But the question is, all right, so we have Baba's knowledge, and we know the deal. We know how to do Sherlock Holmes business, right? And we figure out, okay, it's not your fault. I understand where it's coming from. It's about me. Now, then I get angry with myself. How did I allow myself to go there? How did I, then I blame myself. How did I allow myself to react?
Yeah, that's okay. So you just
went
there.
What is it that I'm attached to here? Why am I reacting?
Okay, that's it. Well, that's the exercise we just did.
Yeah.
So you got angry. Notice. Behind the anger, behind that emotion, is there's an image in your mind that you are attached to. Okay? I want you to clean the car this way. I want you to do it perfectly. And I've made a mess of the car. So I get angry at myself. I'm not getting angry at myself, really. I had an image of myself doing it perfectly. And I didn't do it very well. You see? So now I'm getting angry really at another person. It's just a memory of me doing the car. This is very subtle awareness. It's quite important to see this, yeah, because you are not getting angry at you. You cannot get angry at you. It's impossible. But you can get angry at a memory of something that you have done. And you are not a memory. Do you see that? You are you, and you create memories. Memories are your creation. Do you see it? Now, this takes it a little bit deeper, and maybe we finish on this. Just one little bit deeper. It's the same with love. You cannot love yourself. Can you love yourself? Do you have to love yourself? Do you love yourself? You need to learn to love yourself. Take this away. Really, this is a great meditation. Just be very aware. I love myself. Hold on. There's an I and a self. There's two me. No, there's only one me. Isn't there? Is there two yous? No, there's only one I, one self, one me. Now, when you give a gift with love, do you ever give a gift with love occasionally? Yes? Who feels that love first on the way out? You do. So where is that love coming from? Your feet? Your knees? Where is that love coming from? You know this. It's coming from the self, the I. So wait a minute. That means the I is love. Love is what I... Is that right? Love is just a vibration of my energy. It is me radiating outwards. Is that true? This means yes, this means no. Is that true? So far, so good? So, can love love love? Or can the eye see the eye? Can the finger touch the finger? Can you love yourself? It's okay to keep trying. It's okay. It won't do any harm. And do keep trying. Keep trying to love yourself. It's like, I need to love myself until I don't need to love myself. And you don't need to love yourself the moment you realize, guess what? Love is what I am. Not Om Shanti, Om Love. Om Love. It's what you are. Is it not? Yeah. Meditate on this. This sets you free. I did a workshop with this about 2 months ago with about 20 people, and half the people came up after and said, oh, what a relief. Yeah, because they're the kind of people that kept coming to workshops and they kept leaving thinking, I need to love myself some more. I need to work on myself and learn to love me. Learn to be kind to me. No. You are kindness. You are love. I am that. That is what I am. Do you see it? Otherwise, tension. I and me? Oh, I need to love. Who am I loving? Is it me that's loving I or I that's loving me? No. We radiate outwards. Outwards. Away. It's good. I think that's enough. I think that's enough. Shall we finish with a few moments of quietness and then you have a little bit of space between now and lunch? If anyone would like notes on this session, I'm very happy to email them to you. If you want to leave me your email address, I have 2 pages on this particular session and it kind of revises everything we've done. So if you'd like to have that, leave me your email at the end. If you write it on a piece of paper, really, really clearly if you can, not doctor's handwriting. I hope there's no doctors here. Yeah, very clearly. And just leave them on the stage here and I'll send you the notes to revise the session with an exercise to do as well. Hello. I presume it's on tape. I don't know. It'll be on audio tape, I'm sure. Yeah, I think so. It is being taped? This means yes or this means no? When I go back to the UK and start doing this yes and no, and they get very confused, I tell you. So listen, thanks for your attention, thanks for staying awake, thanks for playing in the exercise, and I'm around for the next couple of days. Please, any questions, I'm happy to be available. So let's finish with a few moments of quietness together. Good.
Thank you.